98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Pickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Pickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Pickley and Murata. This is the greatest
show. Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show
really
that's ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Pickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
Happy Monday, Valley sports fans, but is it really? It kind of feels like a Steve Wilkes Monday around here.
Oh, no. How dare you start the week off on that note?
Kind of feels like a Steve Wilkes Monday.
What have you done to Dan Pickley, and why have you turned him into Vince Murata? Right? Why have you done this?
Yeah. Because that's just kind of how it feels to me. It just feels like it feels on a Monday when the Cardinals lose a particularly troubling football game. Now, one basketball game does not equal one football game. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Except when it's the Lakers. So we're going to get into that momentarily. But before we do, maybe as a delaying tactic, have you seen all the closed captioning blunders that are going on in Major League Baseball for whatever reason?
No.
It's like every day on Twitter, somebody puts a snapshot of some ridiculous closed captioning interpretation of something that was certainly not said. And sometimes it's really just off the charts stupid. Some people clearly do not have closed caption technology at the level others do. At Louisiana State University's graduation ceremonies, a girl by the name of Olivia Brignac, B-R-I-G-N-A-C, was one of the graduates. You know what they flashed up on the gigantic screen?
Oh, no.
Olivia is a Big Mac. And LSU had to apologize. And this is like a new thing now. Jarrett, you might want to hit the microphone on button.
No, I was testing out a line in my head before I said it online.
So there's trying new methods, huh?
Is that really what you were doing?
Look at you turning over a new leaf.
Well, I was going to say, well, there's corporate synergy for you.
Yeah, right? Olivia is a Big Mac. There you go.
My son showed me a graduation announcement snafu. I know it's not safe for the air, but I can't remember what it was either. I'll have to have him send it to me.
Yeah, so like I said, I don't know what closed captioning technology, the differences among different providers, but there's some inferior stuff out there. That's pretty obvious.
Look, I don't know how it works. It's obviously a very valuable service, but I even notice this year with the new video boards, the way it's set up at the Suns Arena, everything I say on the PA shows up in one of the corners captioned. And sometimes, you know, if the game's not going great or, you know, it's not that exciting, I'll say something and I'll look up and I'll say, I never said that.
That's funny.
Did I say that?
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of inferior service, start the show, Carlin.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Hey, how we start the Splash for Monday, May 10th. Another flat performance by the Suns resulted in another loss in L.A. to the Lakers, 123-110 at Staples Center. The Lakers, playing without LeBron James, Dennis Schroeder, and Kyle Kuzma, jumped out to a double-digit lead in the first 5 minutes of the game and really never looked back. Suns were able to claw their way back from a 23-point deficit in the fourth quarter behind Cameron Payne, who had 24 points, a career high. They got to within 7 with just under 4 minutes to go, but then went cold, 1-for-7 down the stretch, and they take the L. Anthony Davis led the Lakers with 42 points, the second most points scored against the Suns this year. And Phoenix now 48-20, still in second place in the West, 2 games behind Utah, 3 games in front of the Clippers with just 4 games remaining. So it's feeling like number 2 is going to happen for the Suns. Mm-hmm. They're in San Francisco to take on the Golden State Warriors tomorrow night.
Yeah, big questions coming out of last night's game. Heavy questions. Monty Williams had heavy questions. We're going to get into all of it very soon.
Yes, Rick Tockett out as head coach of the Arizona Coyotes after 4 years on the job. The organization and the coach mutually parted ways after a disappointing end to the season that sees the Coyotes out of the playoffs for the 8th time in 9 years. General Manager Bill Armstrong said in a statement, quote, after meeting with Rick, we have agreed that a coaching change is in the best interest of the club. This was a very difficult decision, but we believe that it is time for a new direction and new leadership. The Coyotes finished 5-11-1 over their last 17 games, yeah. And that included 2 wins over the weekend in San Jose after they'd already been eliminated from playoff competition. In his 4 years, Tockett 125-131-34. The search for a new coach is underway.
All right. I think the fact that the organization is portraying that they needed a different voice is nonsensical. I think Rick Tockett did a great job with this team. It was beset by injuries and mediocre goaltending. Rick Tockett did a great job here. And he came at a very pivotal time in the organization. As usual, there's always somebody who's doing something to keep this organization afloat. I think this was as much of a Rick Tockett wanting out as much as anything. That's my take on it.
Yeah, and
maybe
I know
I'm wrong.
Yeah,
that's my take.
I know you're not alone in that belief, though. And Rick Tockett, you know, a lot of times you hear mutual parting between coach and an organization, mm-hmm. but you know, Rick Tockett had glowing things to say in a statement too. So yeah, I think this had been moving for a while.
Yeah, I think so.
D-back swoon continues with a 4-2 loss to the New York Mets at Citi Field, wrapping up an 0-6 road trip. Jacob DeGrom shut down Arizona's bats for 5 innings before leaving the game before the 6th for undisclosed reasons. D-backs have lost 6 in a row. They went 4-for-32 with runners in scoring position and left 29 runners on base in the 3 games in New York, where they've lost 10 straight dating back to 2018. It's back home for the D-backs, hosting the Miami Marlins tonight at Chase Field. Luke Weaver gets the start, 6:40 first pitch. Pre-game coverage starts at 6 here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Now, to think this baseball team, when they left for this road trip, they were dancing with the manager. They were celebrating the manager's 300th win. I even read in a Nick Pecoro story that they actually donned beach attire when they got on the plane for Miami. They haven't won since. And there were a lot of signs of frustration in yesterday's game. Lots of them.
Yeah, that last win when they did their whole beach thing, and that was the celebration for Troy Lovello's 300th win.
Uh-huh.
What a difference a week makes, huh?
Woo,
boy. The Arizona Cardinals announcing new jersey numbers for a lot of their players. We knew Buda Baker was switching from 32 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Edmonds going from 22 to 2. Byron Murphy will wear number 7. Zaven Collins, the first-round pick, will wear number 25. And James Conner, the newly acquired running back, will wear number 6.
Wow.
So they're snapping up those single-digit jerseys.
A lot of people wanted those single-digit jerseys.
Yeah, and a lot of them thought about it and didn't want to shell out for the existing jerseys that they had on the market. So elsewhere in the NFL, according to multiple reports, the Indianapolis Colts signing former Chiefs number 1 overall pick Eric Fisher, 1 year's $9.4 million. Big news in horse racing. Churchill Downs has suspended Bob Baffert, the trainer, from entering horses at the track and suggested that it would invalidate Medina Spirit's Kentucky Derby victory if the results of a failed post-race drug test are upheld. That hasn't happened since 1968, but they did say, to be clear, if the findings are upheld, Medina Spirit's results in the Kentucky Derby will be invalidated. And Mandaloon will be declared the winner.
Okay, Bob Baffert, this is the 5th horse he's had busted this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's blaming this all on cancel culture. This is how weirded out we have gotten in this country. You get your horse gets busted for doping, and you're blaming it on cancel culture?
I say blame the horse.
Yeah, that would be good.
Look, we
can't
only
leave that horse
we can
alone
only
for 5 minutes.
We can only be with the horse during certain hours.
Right.
We don't know what happens after dark. Apparently, this horse has a drug problem.
that would have been more feasible.
He was
just
trying
blame
stuff,
it on the horse.
Trying stuff willy nilly.
Yeah.
And on golf, Rory McIlroy got his first PGA Tour win in 18 months. He won the Wells Fargo Championship in North Carolina by 1 stroke over Abraham Answer.
Good to see that. Good to see that happen.
There you go. There's your splash from Monday, May 10th. We got to dive in next to a disappointing performance in L.A. by the Suns and what it all means moving forward. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Bickley and Murata.
And gets it in for Chris Paul, and there's the final buzzer. Final score from Staples Center. Lakers 123, Suns 110. The Suns fall to 48-20 on the season. The Lakers improve to 38-30, and still with a chance to get themselves out of that play-in game. The Suns' chances of finishing on top of the Western Conference maybe fall a little bit with this loss as they drop to two games behind the Utah Jazz.
John Bloom on the final call last night. Suns lose in L.A. 123-110, and even the 13-point final deficit didn't really tell the story of the game. It was another flat start. You fall behind by double digits early. If there's a reason to be concerned, I think Monty Williams, after the game, crystallized it, Bick.
The reality is this is two games in a row where teams have come out with playoff intensity, and we haven't started games well. Or played it well in the first half to have some momentum going in the halftime. We've had to come out of halftime and try to dig ourselves out of a semi-hole the other day. And then today, you know, from an intensity standpoint, I thought we were way behind. You look at the stats, it looks like, you know, in the second half, we played a lot better, but we just got to get off to better starts. And we have to understand that teams are sending a message. You know, this time of the year, we play playoff teams. We played a team that we might see in the first round. And I felt like they were sending us a message tonight. And I think our guys heard it loud and clear.
Yeah, it was loud and clear. And that is concerning because you go back to Friday night. The second half of the Knicks game was a spectacular performance by the Suns. Mm-hmm. They dominated after halftime, but Monty Williams is exactly right. The Knicks came out with playoff-type intensity, especially on the defensive end early. The Suns fell behind. They were able to turn it around. We did see the same thing last night, and really, the Suns looked out of sorts offensively all night long. Credit to the Lakers' defense, but the Suns were sloppy with the basketball. Yeah. They were a step slow on loose balls all night. It is... You know, if you've got high hopes for the playoffs, those types of performances, especially against a team you could see early in the playoffs, is very discouraging.
Well, and so then you ask yourself, what exactly, why is this happening to this basketball team? Again, the inclination and the temptation was to celebrate that great overtime period this team authored on the road. But there was a flip side to that, and that was, okay, wow, look at how you flipped the switch on the intensity like that. What's preventing you from being like that to start games? It's either an inherent laziness among some of their key players, or they're just dead dog tired. And if it's the latter, you've got an interesting little scenario in front of you now. If you want to avoid the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs, then you want the Lakers to jump the Blazers. They're one game back of the Blazers, except the Blazers have the tiebreaker, correct?
I believe so,
yeah. So they're, in effect, two games behind the Blazers. So you've got a game tomorrow against Golden State, then you've got a game Thursday against Portland, then you've got two more against San Antonio at the end of the year. So when do you get this rest? Because you probably need one win, or maybe not, to stay in the number two seed. I think you're right about that. They're pretty ensconced there. With the Clippers losing to the Knicks yesterday, Suns are pretty ensconced there. Three-game lead on the Clippers with four to play. So where do you rest? Where do you feel good pulling the plug on going all out to win these games? And is it something they're going to even entertain at this point?
That's a great question. I think now, and I've been resistant to the idea of rest because it's just so opposite of how they've handled themselves, but you bring up a great point. It wasn't just last night. It wasn't just the first half against the Knicks. Since they came off that 3-2 road trip, which was tough, but everybody was pretty much thrilled with winning three of the five games on a tough Eastern road trip. Then you come home, you beat the Clippers and you beat the Jazz. Then it was back out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Since that game in Oklahoma City, this has looked like a different basketball
team.
And I think in that stretch, the Suns have played really 29 great minutes of basketball. and that was the 24 minutes on Friday night against the Knicks and the five-minute overtime period against Cleveland.
Agreed.
Other than that, they've looked like a very beatable but not special basketball team.
It's a shame because watching that back half of the Knicks game on Friday, I know you were there and it was a very special scene. I could feel it on television.
Oh, my goodness. It was crazy in there.
DeAndre Ayton was so dominant and so good in the closing stretches of that game that I walked away Friday night going, this team could actually pull this off. And that's why yesterday was so staggeringly weird to me. Lakers are 17-23 since Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not good at all. They were missing key players yesterday, and I know the Suns were missing Cam Johnson, but when you miss Dennis Schroeder, LeBron James, and Kyle Kuzma, that's significant.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Davis returned and just dominated. So you're left to kind of sort out what this all means. This was the kind of game that can do some psychological damage if they are to meet the Lakers in the playoffs. I'll just say that. Now, you can make an argument. You could argue this a couple different ways. You could say maybe the Lakers caught lightning in a bottle because while they always play defense generally that good, they generally do not shoot the ball from three-point land as well as they did yesterday.
No, okay? Especially from guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, mm-hmm. Ben McLemore, and Wesley Matthews. I mean, they had 10 three-pointers between them. They were shooting lights out.
There was more of this stuff locally that I'm going to get into later about playing 5-on-8 like the refs were an obstacle. We need to stop that victimization immediately. If you want to look at this, and you could also say Anthony Davis's game might be the best thing the Suns need to see a worst case scenario facing their front line in the playoffs. At least they saw what it looked like yesterday. But I think what you need to do is you need to look inward and say, okay, what concerns you about this basketball team? Cam Johnson's injury, you mentioned it earlier, the fact that he's wearing a cast now.
Yeah, I saw that on Friday night, and I knew he had the wrist problem, but to see it casted basically up to his elbow was mm-hmm. a little bit disconcerting.
His teammates have got to stop beating him up, man. Right? Punching him in the nose, hacking him on the wrist.
Somebody must have put him in an arm bar after a game.
I'm kidding, of course. Then there's that. There's the Devin Booker performances. Devin Booker has had a string of 30-plus point games. He's been decorated. He's won awards. There are just games when he looks like less than what I would have hoped he would have been.
He was not
big moments.
I mean, if there's a plus in the last two games from Devin Booker is that he's lived at the free throw line. 22 attempts in two games. You'll take that. That's the number I think that the Suns want him to be at. The shooting has just gone south in the last two games. 8-for-26 against the Knicks and the Lakers. It's way down on the list of disappointments because mm-hmm. they did play so poorly last night. But when they got to within 7, there was time left. They've hit a couple shots. They might be able to steal that game. And I just think their big players, their important players, didn't play up to the level they needed to mm-hmm. in that intense late game situation last night.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't even mentioned 8-3 shot attempts the entire game.
Yeah. I don't know whether this was an awestruck game for DeAndre Ayton, but DeAndre Ayton, they did not have him checking Anthony Davis. They chose to try to put Torrey Craig on him and hope for the best, and that did not work.
Well, in the first half. Torrey Craig didn't even play in the second half.
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It did not work. And so I think they went into the game with this idea in mind and found out very fast that, okay, we can't do that. And by then he was in rhythm, and by then, all of it kind of was spiraling downhill for the Suns. Fascinating final week of the NBA season ahead of us.
Yeah, and a lot of it is fascinating due to the amount of mystery. Like you said,
mm-hmm.
if the Suns feel right now, okay, we're not going to catch Utah. Let's look at their schedule. They're playing really good basketball right now. They've won 5 in a row. We're 2 games behind them. How important is it to still pursue the number one seed? You'd really have to play terribly down the stretch and have the Clippers get hot to blow a 3-game lead with 4 to play.
Yeah.
That might be the determination. Not everybody at once, but hey, you're going to get a night off here.
Yeah.
You're going to get a night off here.
Maybe Chris Paul and maybe Devin Booker both don't feel so good tomorrow. And you just take your chances, then bring them back against Portland, and then sit them the last couple of games, if you can pull that off. Because, again, dislodging having the Lakers, having the Trailblazers fall to seven interests me. Because can the Lakers actually catch them? I don't know. You're hearing reports of LeBron looking really good in practice now. I don't know. There are a lot of teams looking at the chessboard and asking themselves, who do we want to play? There are a lot of national media people dogging the Suns after yesterday's game.
Yeah. And performances like that will bring that up.
Yeah, it will.
LeBron did return to the court last night. Did you see him standing on the court while coaching one of his players in street clothes?
I missed that. I saw him in street clothes.
Coming up next, the Coyotes make a coaching change. Could there be another one coming with a Valley team in the future? We'll get to that next. It's Bickley and Murata on this Monday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's a Monday edition of Bickley and Murata, live from the Ochsner Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Hope you had a great Mother's Day weekend. Back at it this week. One person not back at it this week, Rick Tocchet. Yesterday, it became known that the Arizona Coyotes and their head coach, mutual parting of ways after 4 years. Looks like a new direction is sought by ownership and management. Gambo had tweeted out over the weekend, expect a young, up-and-coming assistant coach to take over.
Yeah, what's that code for, Vinny? What is that code for? Inexpensive? Controllable?
Inexpensive is a nice way to put it.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. In other words, they're not going to afford John Tortorella.
No, who's also available.
Who's available, wins everywhere where he goes, but is a
makes everybody
holy
mad.
Terror. He's a holy terror.
I mean, they could just hire John Tortorella in 2 years when he gets fired from his next job. If they want to do that.
That's always a possibility. Rick Tocchet said in a statement, quote, "It's been an honor to coach the Coyotes the past 4 seasons. I have great respect and admiration for all the players I coached in Arizona, along with my coaching staff, the medical staff, equipment managers, the PR staff, and the team services staff. They're the best in the NHL, and I appreciate all their help and hard work. I also want to thank the fans of the Valley for all their support. I've loved living, playing, and coaching in Arizona, and this place will always be special to me." Like I said, mutual parting. Rick Tocchet's name is already coming up in rumors for the expansion Seattle Kraken job. Mm,
interesting.
So we'll see if something pops there.
Yeah.
But I started thinking about this. This doesn't really come as a surprise, especially based on some of the reports late in the season from around the NHL. But could this be the first of another coaching change happening with one of the major Valley teams?
Yeah, I think that's it's an interesting way to frame this conversation, because I don't think they are similar, but maybe they are. In terms of Rick Tocchet, I believe this is more about him wanting to leave the organization than about the organization going, man, you know what? You screwed this up. We had a 4 seed. We missed the playoffs. This is on you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that apply to the Diamondbacks? Well, when they left town here, people, you and me included, were pointing out what a great job Torrey Lovello was doing with not really great groceries. Right.
And a lot of the good groceries still stuck in the cupboard.
It's still stuck in the cupboard. Correct. And now they've gone on a road trip where they haven't won a game. Frustrations boiled over yesterday. Eduardo Escobar thrown out of the game. Didn't like a pitch prior to him striking out. Torrey Lovello came out. He got tossed immediately as well. After the game, Torrey sounded beaten.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this happens to him occasionally. Torrey works really hard at his job, and occasionally, after losing streaks, he wears it. You can feel it, you can see it, you can hear it.
Yeah, here he was talking about the mounting frustrations.
With the frustration mounting, for an assortment of different reasons, we came out here with the best of intentions to grind through, and compete and win a baseball game. I thought we put ourselves in position to do that several times today. We just couldn't get that big hit at the right time to break this game open. Once again, it's that slug situation that we've been mentioning where, we've had the right guys in the right spots with the ability to break games open, and it's just not getting done. But we will continue to talk about certain things and do the best we can as teachers and allow these guys to go out and perform at the high level that they have spoiled us with from time to time.
Yeah, I don't think, and maybe looking back over, that stretch where the Coyotes left town on a high note before mm-hmm. they went to Miami and New York, I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're that bad as the, what they showed the last six games. I mean, I think there are elements of this team that are that bad, the, the bullpen being among them. And we know when you get an offense that struggles, that's one thing. Starting pitching struggling is very detrimental. But when you have just repeated failures from your bullpen in holding leads, that'll take away your spirit as a team.
Oh, it will. That's a good way of putting it. It'll really drown your spirit, if you will. And I think there's a lot of that. The one game that this offense and this road trip scored more than three runs was the one game the bullpen blew. And so those are a lot of stress points. Torey Lovello mentioned a play in which Jacob deGrom, the great pitcher for the Mets, laid down a bunt. And Eduardo Escobar was playing way too deep. And he mentioned that this is an issue, not having guys in the right spot.
Torey, with another thing with Eduardo, was he playing a little too deep on that DeGrom at bat there when he wound up putting down the bunt single?
I thought so, yes. That's one of those little things that I'm talking about. And it's not Eduardo's fault. It was more than that. I know he's the easy target. We
got to
figure that out.
Well, now, what do you think?
That's a weird answer,
right?
That's a very weird answer. And Jacob deGrom is not only the best pitcher in baseball, he can hit a little bit, too. So maybe the thought was they're going to let him swing away. He's hitting like 462 going into that at-bat, but then he expertly lays down a bunt. If you watch the highlights from the Mets broadcast, the Mets broadcasters are saying, look, they're not playing bunt at all. If deGrom can lay this down, he might be able to beat one out.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh.
So to say, yes, I felt he was playing too deep, but it's not his fault.
Okay.
I don't know what to
make of
that.
I felt he was playing too deep, then like 3 seconds of silence, then the like sort of like...
Okay, we're gonna take this as well. We're going to take the hit on this as well. Now, who's in charge of defensive positioning? Isn't that the manager? Now, I'm sure you delegate and you have different people who do different things. And I'm sure it's not all on the manager, but if that's, you know, I mean, there's got to be some intuition in the baseball player, too, when the pitcher's up to bat. And then to compound it, he makes a throwing error, the guy goes to third, and now you've got silly baseball putting you in a deficit situation.
That was a great way to put it, silly baseball.
Silly baseball.
And here was Torey Lovello, you know, he mentioned it in that answer about the Escobar positioning on the bunt. We're not doing a lot of the little things. So this was actually before the specifics of the Escobar play, but here he is expanding on little things.
You know, I've talked about a lot of the little things here. Little things matter to me, and they matter to this organization. It's one of my it's one of the values that I instill inside of this organization on a daily basis. And we're not doing a lot of little things right now. That's probably the area that I am most frustrated by. So, no, that's on me. I gotta deliver these messages. I gotta talk to the coaches. I gotta get the coaches to talk to the players. I've gotta deliver the messages to the players. Deliver those messages to the players myself. And those little things are probably areas that don't initially show up in the box score. But when we do them right, and we do them the way we're supposed to do them, and the way we need to do them, we're a good baseball team.
Yeah, and if you want to hear more audio of Torey Lovello wearing it, asked for further details on the little things.
Playing fast. Being in the right place with your pre-pitch setup. Not being afraid to make mistakes. Sometimes I think we're going forward with our emergency brake on. That's unacceptable to me.
Now that too, that
sounds
metaphor,
different.
Yeah, that metaphor was, I heard that and I'm like, wow, what does that mean? Going forward with your emergency brake on, meaning something is holding back your player's aggressiveness? It's odd putting all that together. Are there members of his coaching staff that are not performing or not doing what they're being delegated to do?
I think it's fair to speculate on that when you say, hey, he was playing too deep, but that's not on him.
But that's not, and it's not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For a guy, we've talked about it a lot, and I think it's one of the great qualities of Torey Lovello, especially in a job like this, is And he uses the phrase a lot. You know me, I'm the eternal optimist.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a whole lot of real optimistic tone.
Yeah,
yesterday.
That's right. And somebody also said he's battling a bad cold. So that might be some of it. Mm-hmm. But those are heavy words, right?
No, and then you got booted again yesterday, too.
Yeah, and you got booted, too. Yeah.
That does remind me of the great Mitch Hedberg line of, I once drove 5 miles with my emergency brake on. That doesn't say a lot for me, but it also doesn't say a lot for the emergency brake.
That's excellent.
I had not heard that one.
I hadn't heard that one in a really long time. Well done, Jared. Coming up next, the NFC West figures to be even tougher in 2021. Where do the Cardinals figure into the mix? One expert's thoughts don't exactly instill confidence in AZ. More next on Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
Well, we all expected 2020 to be really tough in terms of in-division opposition for the Arizona Cardinals. It played out that way. But, the Rams were good. The Seahawks were good. The Cardinals were in position for a playoff spot. They faltered down the stretch, and San Francisco just had the year from from H-E double hockey sticks. Everything went wrong for them. I know that was controversial of me. how much have the Cardinals helped themselves?
Uh-huh.
They were very busy and aggressive in free agency. They had a draft that's kind of all over the place in terms of reaction. And again, we got to preface this by saying this is just one guy's breakdown of it.
Mm-hmm.
But this stood out to me big time, Vic. When you consider the Cardinals just got done with the draft, and we're going to talk to a member of that draft class, Tay Gowan, is going to join us at 11:15. But they drafted 16th, so they were right in the middle of the league in terms of competitive, all things considered. Mm-hmm. Right in the middle of the league. Shiel Kapadia of The Athletic did his post-draft power rankings in the NFL. He does not believe the Cardinals helped themselves very much. He's got them at number 22 on this pecking order.
Mm.
He wrote, they binged on older veterans like J.J. Watt, Rodney Hudson, Malcolm Butler, and A.J. Green, expressing clearly that they feel like they can make a deep run while Kyler Murray is still on a rookie contract. But what is Cliff Kingsbury's plan for designing an offense that helps Murray and performs better than the 19th ranked unit in the NFL? There's a scenario where Watt stays healthy. Kingsbury figures some things out. Murray performs like an MVP candidate, and Rondale Moore is one of the best performing rookie wide receivers. But the Cardinals have a lot to prove and have not earned the benefit of the doubt that they'll take a real step forward.
Okay.
The number stands out as 22. Wow, that might be a little bit low.
Mm-hmm.
But what he writes, I think, is completely fair.
Yeah, no, it is completely fair, and the number of it is irrelevant because the criticism of it, I think, is very valid. I think that that's a great unknown. We do not have evidence that this head coach can implement an offense that works on the NFL level. That's the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of furthering the skepticism would have been what we saw in the last two games last year. And then furthering that is, we're talking about a head coach who ran what some might call a gimmick offense, certainly a collegiate-based offense, and never really had success, a lot of success. So I think all of that, while not arguing for the man to lose his job, that ship has sailed. It certainly is a reason for concern, and to me, one of the top storylines of this entire season. It's what is this offense going to look like? There's a supposition that, a Rondale Moore can come in and take over the slot receiver position in year one because he did it extremely well in college. And yeah, I think I would bet on that happening. But how many times do we have to see players fail on the NFL level to not make those suppositions? So to me, there's a lot of weirdness here. And I think the edict that Steve Keim gave to Cliff Kingsbury, that Cliff, this is going to sound like I'm ripping him, but that was like the only thing I've ever heard him say that was interesting, that had insight at a press conference.
What?
Was the whole thing about
what Cliff said?
Yeah. About, we were all given the mandate from Steve Keim, These guys got to play. The first two picks have got to play, got to play early. And you wonder what exactly that means. Does that mean that Steve Keim is not happy with the way guys have been developed? That he wasn't happy with the deployment of Isaiah Simmons? That he wasn't happy that Josh Jones, what do you have, 55 snaps after the organization just raved about his drafting last year? So I don't know what all. It all sounds too like there's just too much desperation in the air. I look at the pieces, and if everything works, yeah, this team can win 10 games. If this quarterback elevates, yeah, he's going to bring everyone along with him. But will there be a structure, a winning NFL structure? Nobody knows because we haven't seen it.
No, I think it's, if you're going to judge year two over year one, I think in the first nine games, people would say, yeah, this team looks like it's growing a little bit. And that finish, and I know how it affected you and just dampened your whole offseason future thoughts for this organization, but that finish was the definition of discouraging.
Yeah.
And for good reason, the guy that makes this whole thing go from a player standpoint, Kyler Murray offensively, he was dealing with an injury. There was a lot of mystery about it, but it was clear something was bothering him, and they were not able to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
And, Kyler Murray at less than 100% so far in his NFL career. And I can't even say that because everybody's under 100%. But when he's affected by injury, there's nothing really to instill confidence that they can be effective offensively.
Yeah, and it gives credence to the people that say that any steps that they've taken have not really been due to Cliff Kingsbury. It's been just due to the greatness of Kyler Murray. That the offense and the innovation is just Kyler Murray. It's not necessarily the play calling or the play development.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, but in my mind. We have no way of knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way to know that, though, is that when Murray wasn't 100%, they weren't able to adjust the offense at all when he couldn't make those
great... If he couldn't make plays with his legs or wasn't willing to, what did this offense end up doing? Yeah, they just... It was the confusion and the lack of coherency and the lunacy and derelict play calling, situational play calling in tight situations. Timeouts, penalties, stuff like that. It's all substandard. It's bad. And so is Kyler Murray good enough to compensate for that? It depends what kind of step he takes.
The other bad part of reading this particular piece on The Athletic is where all the other teams in the division are on this particular power ranking.
Mm-hmm.
They're all in the top eight. 6, 7, and 8. Rams 6, San Francisco 7, Seattle 8.
Yeah. I for one, and I know I feel this way stronger than I believe you do, I for one am really weirded out by what might happen to the Rams now that they have a real quarterback in their midst. Jared Goff was capable of having really good games, usually against the Cardinals, but he also hamstrung that offense a lot. And he was very inconsistent. Now they've got a big boy quarterback in there with Sean McVay. I'm worried about that.
I would agree with your assessment that you're more worried about that than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a Matthew Stafford guy. I just don't know how much better he is.
Yeah.
And it's hard to gauge because he's played in Detroit so long and he put up huge numbers. But, he didn't. Maybe that's not fair. He didn't elevate the Lions. Who's elevated the Lions in their careers?
Yeah. I think I heard Bernsey and Luke talk about how they really doubted the Seahawks this coming year, that with all the dysfunction between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, that this might be a team that kind of falls off the map. They've got too much of a history of being a 10-win team darn near every season for me to go down that road. 49ers, I think, might have spit the bit here, but we'll see. That's going to be fascinating.
With the Trey Lance pick?
Yeah. Yeah, because, you've got Jimmy Garoppolo, who can't be enamored with the organization now. So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to be fascinating to see where this all goes. It'll be fascinating to see if Aaron Rodgers gets out of the NFC. That would be a huge break for everybody, every competing team in the NFC.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the 49ers, though, a couple of other things to consider. 49ers had the worst injury luck of any team last season, and they faced the third toughest schedule. This is Kapadia's writing. This year, if we go by projected win totals from the betting markets, the 49ers have the NFL's easiest schedule. Bottom line, they were one of the NFL's most unlucky teams last year and are one of the most likely teams to rebound in 2021. And that's regardless of who's playing quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
We know for a fact that when Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy, the San Francisco 49ers win a lot of games.
Yes.
The question is, can he stay healthy? Can they avoid another nightmare year injury-wise? I mean, that roster is really good.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Despite all the weirdness from the front office and the draft proceedings.
I've said this. I'm not a 49ers fan, but if you were a 49ers fan, you would feel nothing but pride for the way the team competed, given its injuries and its bad luck last year, given the fact that wildfires and COVID-19 protocol in the Bay Area, everything conspired against them. And they still fought like heck. They still fought like H-E double hockey sticks, Vinny.
Oh, my goodness. What's going on here today?
The mouth on that guy. I apologize to the young listeners.
But that is what the 49ers showed last year was exactly that their culture and their inner stuff is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you can't argue with that.
Yep. Coming up next, Suns, their recent play has to be concerning. Questions about rest and everything else going on with the Phoenix Suns in the last week of the regular season. Next, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.